It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
And welcome back to the First Cut Podcast here on CBS Sports. Happy July, July 1st. That's Kyle Porter. I'm Chip Patterson. And Kyle, just so much excitement as I am, whether I'm on the train or actually, funny story. Did you know, Kyle, that there is a Vancouver, Washington and a Vancouver, British Columbia? And that if you book a train ticket to Vancouver, Washington, that goes south when you meant to go north. So I was on a bus for a little bit, but I was on buses, trains and planes. And on all of these forms of transportation, I enjoyed listening to at least portions of some of the podcast work last week. And so I felt like y'all did such a good job. I had to come storming back in through the door and grab the microphone.
We need to get sponsored by Wheels Up so you don't have to be on buses anymore.
If we get sponsored by Wheels Up or NetJets, just bring it on, because I would – listen, that could get you to the Open. That could get both of us at majors so that we don't have to be going one at home, one on the road. Like, this really, really opens up the possibilities. So, just slide up in the DMs. They're open. So,
Have you ever flown private?
No, I have not.
I did it one time. I won't say with who. I'll tell you later.
Oh, I know with who. Does it have to do with a sporting event?
Yeah, it does.
Are you sure you haven't talked about that on this podcast?
I probably have. I don't want to like highlight it, but dude, it's like life changing. You get on a regular plane. It's sort of like the rich people version, I guess, of like being inside the ropes versus being in the gallery at a golf event.
Sure.
Once you're inside the ropes, you're like, well, I can't do anything else. I always find just regular, coach. You're like, oh, this isn't as good. Like, this isn't even close.
Yeah, they say that if you fly first class half a dozen times, it's difficult to ever go back. And
yeah,
I'm sure the PJ is just the next step in that.
It really is. It's like a different it's like a different form of transportation, honestly.
All right, so we are looking back at the weekend action, and there was this is one of those stories where in the winter, and sometimes it doesn't even result in the winner, it just, getting in contention going into the weekend at a PGA Tour event, the job of the broadcasters and the broadcast is to tell some of the stories. And so we got a real glimpse into some emotion, some heartbreak, and in Nate Lashley's journey to being the winner this weekend at the Rocket Mortgage Classic. And so I'll let you take the helm on this, because I know you're also working on a story, because on one hand, we've got Nate's story, and on another hand, we've got this interesting wrinkle about how close, how difficult it was for him to even be in the event. So I'll let you take lead here, but I do think there's a lot of fun angles to breaking down Lashley right after his career-changing win.
Yeah, there is. I think the first one is like bigger picture. And Porath and I talked about this a little bit last week. We recorded on Tuesday, and he was talking about there's no way to like voice this without sounding ridiculous, but I said this on Morning Drive this morning on Golf Channel. I'm doing that this week. And it's almost like there's two different tours. Like, there's the tour that the top 12 guys play that we always talk about. And then there's the other tour that is so meaningful to the Nate Lashleys and the Kevin Nas and the Scott Stallings, like guys like that. And for him, I think that we get in, or I get into this thing where it's like, do the non-majors even matter? And it's like, well, no, they don't to Fowler and DJ and Rory, but they really, really matter to these other guys. I mean, this is a life-changing event, and I think that, and Porath brought this up, he said he thinks this is what makes the PGA Tour really good and successful, is when these stories get told. And I totally agree with that, because just of what it means to Lashley. But for me, like, the more interesting thing here, like, his backstory awesome? Yes, of course. It's so good and so meaningful, and people should go read everything they can about him. But how about him even getting into this tournament?
Right.
I mean, he goes, he tries to Monday in, finish. I think he shot, I think it was 69 or 68 maybe. And I think 66 was like a 5-for-2 playoff. So he finishes a couple out of the playoff. Then he's like third alternate. Bunch of people drop out. He's the I think he's the last guy in, and then he ends up winning by 6. I mean, it's crazy, like how, like he went out and beat last place, which was Smiley Kaufman, who made his first cut in 18 months, by 25 strokes. He beat DJ by 16 before DJ ejected for the weekend, or maybe I think he beat him by like 12. Anyway, it really just. It shows you, and this is my big thing, it shows you how thin the margins are on the PGA Tour.
This, to be able to not only get that opportunity, getting in at the last minute, and then capitalize on it, like as the competitor, I, just going into the mind of a competitor, I could think that you could carry on some of that that energy, that momentum, that juice to be able to propel yourself forward. It has to be one of the most impressive things is after shooting a 63 on Saturday to be in that position to sleep on that 54 hole lead and then to go in and back it up. And like you mentioned, beat the rest of the field by 8 strokes like that, that sort of focus and to know that, you know, throughout your entire career, all you want is that opportunity. We always talk about win conversions. All golfers want is that opportunity to be able to convert a win, and then he's able to go out and take care of business. Like there's not to me a huge talking point necessarily about, you know, what does this mean for Nate Lashley going forward? His career's changed, as we've mentioned already. But like to know that you have that ready in your mind and in with your game, like that to me is one of the toughest things about that other PGA Tour, you know, beyond the top 12, when you've got the Scott Stallings, the Nate Lashleys, those players who are trying to not only work your way into the tournament, not only work your way into contention, but then to be able to hold off the rest of the field. That stuff is just kind of mind blowing to me when I sit down and try to put myself in his shoes.
Well, especially because, like, so coming into this event, he didn't have a top 10 on the PGA Tour in a non-opposite field event. So his only top 10 was at, I think it was at Puerto Rico. So an opposite field event. And then he goes out and wins a tournament that has DJ, Ricky, and Gary Woodland, and he wins it by 6. I mean, it really is crazy. And I think, you know, I'm going to talk about this a little bit later with Victor Hovland, but you know, I think – so two things. One is that I think it points to, like, the fact that – not. So we always talk about how we overvalue winning, but I think the PGA Tour overvalues winning a little bit as well, in that it's almost like the chasm between winning and finishing second or third is wider than it should be.
Mm.
And so, like, it's like if you don't convert those – one of those three like opportunities that you have, then it doesn't like it doesn't match up with how good you are for finishing second. So I'm not explaining this very well, but like let's say Lashley goes out and gets beat by, let's say DJ has like an unbelievable week and beats him by 1. Well, Lashley was still like unreal in that week, and it's like he should get more than the second place finisher at a tournament like this gets. Like you shouldn't. Am I making any sense there?
But like based on it's like who you are versus what your finish is, like it's almost like there should be sliding scales based on who we're talking about.
No, not necessarily that, but just like, so I'll do my Victor Hovland thing right now. So he is, I just want to talk about Oklahoma State guys. Shout out to Christopher Ventura for winning on the Korn Ferry Tour. By the way, they changed the web.com tour while you were gone.
No, we talked about the KFC.
Oh yeah. Okay. So Hovland finished T13,
and isn't it the bucket?
Yeah. The KFC bowl. it's so good.
I saw Tron tweeting out like he got 500 kernels instead of 500 web.com points.
So
yes, I'm up. We discussed it before I left, and I have been in tune during my during my scans of the golf world as I was gone.
So Hovland finishes T13 and he gets 56 FedEx Cup points. And if you finish, Lashley got 500 FedEx Cup points for winning. Second place, Doc Redman, who I want to talk about in a second, got 300. And then third place gets 190. And I guess my point in that is, like, if you finish third on the PGA Tour, like solo third in a given week, like that's kind of legit. And you're only getting 190 FedEx Cup points. And so for Hovland, like, he has to get to, can't remember the number, I think it's 350 to earn special temporary membership. You almost can't do it in the seven sponsors exemptions that he's going to get unless you finish like third a couple times or second or win. And so I just don't feel like the scale of what you get in terms of FedEx Cup points, money, exemption stuff for winning, I don't feel like it matches up. I think what I'm saying is I think the PGA Tour overvalues winning compared to like finishing second, third, and fourth. And I don't know why I'm relating that to Lashley, but it's like, it's almost like if he wouldn't have won, then, you know, he's just highlighting the fact that like his conversion rate right now is 100%. Like he's one for one. And if he hadn't done that, it's not as if he would have played worse golf. He just, like, it just feels like you should get more for being way up there in events like this.
So you are totally focused on what it's going to take to get Victor Hovland the points that he needs. And it is ridiculous in your eyes that he could play that well, compete at a high level, beat all of these current full-time pros who have established themselves in the world of professional golf, and only receive but so many FedEx Cup points.
Yeah, I kind of am, right?
but
here's my point. Like, okay, so we talk about like how Lashley's life has changed, and all of this is true. What if DJ goes out and shoots 27 under?
Then he doesn't have, his life is significantly less changed.
Yeah, totally. Like, yeah. It's like a 180, and it doesn't feel like it should be like that. I don't know why I'm so worked up about this. Do you want to talk about Doc Redman?
Well, it's because we have a PGA Tour wins list, not a PGA Tour second place finish list.
Yeah, I know. I know. I get it.
All right, so Doc Redman, I got to get this off my chest from the jump. We call Leesville High School Sleesville, big time rival in the conference of Broughton High School conference, you know, school champs.
Here we go.
So, yeah, I can get over myself with this this old Raleigh, North Carolina high school hatred, and I can support the idea that this young 21-year-old up-and-comer from Clemson really might be good.
Maybe. He won the USAM, so that's not nothing. But, like, he hasn't done anything as a pro, and then all of a sudden – He Monday 62s into this tournament, and he finishes second. And he gets so by finishing second, he got special temporary membership. He's only got like three starts on the PGA Tour this year, and he got temporary membership because he finished second. Hold on, let me pull up his finishes. So Doc Redman in 2019. He played Rocket Mortgage, finished second. He played Wells Fargo, finished T18. That's it. That's all he's played in 2019 on the PGA Tour.
When you say that he might be good, that also is different than he's going to be very successful on the PGA Tour. These are two very different things. But in the same discussion that we've had before where there's so many guys who they were just the best player around growing up. I mean, he was one of the best players in the state of North Carolina all 4 years of high school, state champion as a senior. Like that's like I look at Redman as that example of the guy that you didn't. Don't you have a story of like sitting in the 19th hole watching golf with someone and he was like, oh yeah, like I was, you know, the number one am at this age or that. Like being really, really good doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a successful PGA Tour player. And still him being so young, I'm just willing to say, yeah, he's really, really good, but then the rest is yet to be determined.
Yeah, I just felt like when he turned pro, I was like, okay. I mean, he's fine. He's just not – I think he turned pro after his – freshman year, sophomore year, and you're just like, okay. And then he gets out on tour, doesn't really do anything. I mean, he was ranked 711 going into the Rocket Mortgage. Now he's 190. And I guess my point in all of that is just, again, like we talk about margins with Lashley. I mean, you go in Monday 62 to get into this tournament. You finish second. He gets up and down on 18 on Sunday to finish second, get into the Open, get the 300 points to secure temporary membership. And he's probably, honestly, like if he has another halfway decent finish, he's going to get his card for 2020. And we're talking about somebody who was on the – I mean, he was playing the McKenzie Tour. He's playing in Canada. He's not even on the Corn Ferry. The Colonels are not popping for Doc, you know? And so it's just, I don't know, man. It's a crazy sport, and you have every week, and this is what's fun about it. And this is why guys can't quit. It's an addiction, because every week your life can be completely changed, and everything about what you do can go from like mediocre or pessimistic to like, wow, I'm ranked 190th in the world and I'm playing in the Open and I'm a T11 at the John Deere from having my card for 2020.
Coming up on the other side, we'll get into stock up, stock down, including a look at one of the world's best next.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Hosts Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.
And now it's time for Stock Up, Stock Down, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. Taking a look back at some of the takeaways from the weekend at the Rocket Mortgage Classic. Stock up, stock down. We're going to begin with Dustin Johnson. We mentioned his name a couple times because he goes over 70 first two rounds, misses the cut. He and Gary Woodland among the big names to miss the cut at the event. Is this any major adjustment for you? I know you've got him, and I can't imagine it's stock up, but I'm surprised that you might have a strong take.
Well, I wanted to talk about him just because he was the biggest name the biggest talent in the field. I don't know. Ricky might have been the biggest name. To me, it's maybe this is what he needs. Maybe he needs to get on the Koepka plan. Like just eject at regular events and start winning majors. It's kind of stock the same, maybe slightly down for me. I don't love it when guys do this going into like a major in a couple weeks. I don't think he's playing again. It becomes difficult to like, I don't know. And maybe it doesn't, but it's just harder to pick somebody like that at a major than like, remember when Koepka finished fourth at the Nelson this year, mm-hmm. going into the PGA? And you're like, well, he's going to win the PGA. And then he did.
Right.
Like, I don't know. And maybe it doesn't matter, but he just played pretty poorly on a really easy course.
So let me follow it up with this. I will agree with stock down, especially with the big picture forecast, because how about this? When we look at the golf season, like the Open Championship ain't exactly when I'm picking DJ regularly. You know, DJ's a phenomenal golf talent, but just, you know, if we're picking him at major championships, I choose the other three majors before I finally land at the Open. And so it's, with the new rearranged schedule, it's so strange to be sitting here on July 1 and be like, have we seen all the good DJ golf that we're going to see this year? I mean, could he go and win a playoff event? Will he win another event later this year? Yeah, maybe, sure. He can. He's one of the, you know, best golfing talents in the world, but at least in terms of stock and at least in terms of, you know, the way that we talk about these golfers and how the 12 that matter stack up against each other, kind of feels like all the good opportunities for DJ to thrive are all in the rear view. And to think that on July 1, we're just kind of over DJ for 2019 is crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. And I think it speaks both to him just kind of, I don't know, I'm still annoyed by the T35 at Pebble. You're just like, what was that? You know, like, just because he's dominated that place. And but also I think it speaks to the season's almost over, man.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, this is it. We've got, I think, 9 weeks left or 8 or 7, something like that. It's less than 10. And so you're kind of getting into this thing of like, yeah, who's and look, DJ might win 2 of the 3 playoff events. I have no idea. But you're kind of running out of time to kind of to stack up wins for 2019.
When Dustin Johnson finished T2 at the Masters, I was like, okay, let's go. You know, like, this is, we got Pebble, we got PGA. Like, I was looking at it and I was like, this is going to be awesome. And it just hasn't, it's been a disappointing year. He's not one of the big disappointments. I mean, we're still talking about the number 3 player in the world, even still.
Right.
Yeah. But I think that given the way the expectations were laid out following Augusta, I would agree with you, stock down. Speaking of Augusta, how about former Masters champion Patrick Reed? One of the big names that did stand out. He finishes T5. At the Rocket Mortgage Classic. I didn't get a chance to put my eyes on Patrick Reed's game. Was there any one thing in particular that stood out to you?
Well, he's skinny now. Skinny P. Reed. How do you feel about that?
I'm cool with it. I mean everyone's, listen, as long as he brings it back and lets it go later, I'll be happy.
By the way, somebody today floated this to me, like, there's a curse on winning at Augusta.
How?
So if you go Spieth in 15, he's not playing great. You go Danny Willett in 16, he dropped to 462 in the world last year. You go Sergio in 17, he missed 7 straight major cuts. You go P. Reed in 18, we haven't really heard from him. The kicker was Jennifer Kupcho. She shot, I don't know what it was. Like, she shot an 80, like, in her first pro event or whatever, and she won the Augusta National Women's AM. You're like, well, I guess it applies there as well. No, P. Reed. I saw an article today. Like, he's fired up about the President's Cup, which is just
on brand.
So hilarious.
Yeah,
it's
yeah, yeah.
So good. It's like July, it's like June 30th, and he's talking about playing in Australia in December. But there was a moment. The only reason I listed this is because there was a moment on Sunday. So he's playing 11, which is a par 3, playing 220 on Sunday. And he hits his shot, and it comes up short of the green. Shot length tells me 42 feet short. And he said to his caddy, well, that's as good as I can hit it. and I just died. I was watching on a plane and I just lost it. And I just, the sport is more interesting and more fun whenever he's involved. It's just so great.
Stock up for all of us.
Yeah.
With Patrick Reed.
Totally.
Right there in the mix. Also at T5 is Joaquin Niemann. You were early on the Joaquin Niemann train. You submitted all of your stock claims a long time ago, and now is it time to come and cash in? Are you selling off, or are you going to hold on to it?
Yeah, the SEC is currently investigating how much stock I...
He bought Joaquin Demon. Yeah. It's all gone.
Me and Phil are under investigation right now. he's playing great. Two top 10 finishes in a row. I think he's got I want to say three top 15s in a row. Hold on, I'm pulling it up. He was T5 at Rocket Mortgage. He was T5 at Travelers. He was T31 at Canada, T27 at Memorial. Look, Joaquin Neiman is younger, like a lot younger than Victor Hovland. And so we think of him because he's been on tour a couple years, or I guess this is his second year, really. He's just been more in the public eye in terms of the PGA Tour. And it's like, this dude's 20.
Whoa.
He won't be 21 until the end of 2019. And I don't know. I love that. And I think it matters to stack up that kind of experience when you're 19 and 20 years old.
1999 birth year.
1998, November 1998. Yeah, so he was not alive when Tiger won his first Masters.
Right,
he did not exist.
Stock soaring. If you can get it, Kyle's ready to take your money. And that has been Stock Up, Stock Down, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. All right, Kyle, before we get out of here, we had the U.S. Senior Open over the weekend. Steve Stricker was the headliner of the event, and you were beating the table on Morning Drive, I heard, hollering about strokes gained from 2013 with Steve Stricker. What kind of reception did that get from the rest of the table?
So I went back while you were on. I was just bored while you were on vacation, and I went back and compiled all the strokes gained seasons since 2004. Just fascinating takeaways. We should actually just do a whole pod on it. I was just deep in the process, and Stricker's 2013 is the, I think, 16th best strokes gained season ever recorded.
2013 Steve Stricker. All right, let's see.
So that was only 6 years ago. My point in this is, like, I think you're going to see more guys. I think, you know, the big one is like Phil next year. How's that going to go? What's he going to do with the senior tour? But you're going to see more guys. Because we're seeing guys dominate, or not dominate, but play well for longer on the PGA tour. All of a sudden you get into this thing where it's like, man, somebody who's, you know, 51, like Stricker, I think Stricker's 52. They can just jump onto the senior tour. I mean, the thing that Stricker doesn't do well on the PGA tour is he doesn't have the length. Well, that doesn't matter on the senior tour, and he's better than everybody else at all the other parts of his game. So it just translates really well to that type of golf.
In 13 events that Stricker played in 2013, he made every single cut and had 11 top 25 finishes with 8 top 10 finishes and 4 runner-ups.
Yeah, it was a joke. By the way, strokes gain stats, top 3 seasons since they started recording, since 2004, Tiger 06, 07, 09, number 4, Rory 19.
But incomplete data.
Well, crooked USGA.
No. Oh, wait, does that mean, do they get to count the open stats in that, or does that have no majors?
I don't remember, but you're right about incomplete data in terms of the season's not over yet.
Right,
but
because still, he's going to be number one after he wins the open at Royal Portrush by 7 strokes.
That would be a pretty great ending to not only the major schedule, but his sort of well, it wouldn't be the end of his season, but that'd be pretty cool.
Well, because then he gets to be player of the year. Then it's Rory versus Brooks for player of the year is the debate, right?
Well, and he would have two majors according to the people distributing the player of the year award.
Oh, with the players. Hey, man, you're in Florida. Be careful the way you talk. They'll come find you.
I'm far enough away.
Anything else from the senior open stand out to you?
Tom Watson shot his age 3 times. That's a joke. That's just sick. That's unbelievable. And then, oh, I made a joke on Morning Drive today. I needed you there because it didn't go over as well as it did in my head. So the U.S. Senior Open was played at Notre Dame, the Notre Dame course. I can't remember what it's called. And I said there hasn't been – so Steve Stricker won by 6. I said there hadn't been a blowout this big featuring Notre Dame since the last football game that Notre Dame played against Clemson.
And no one was there to pick you up.
Yeah, it was crickety. It was not great.
You know what? Especially because we've moved on. If you could have slipped in a Manti Te'o's girlfriend joke in there too, because that was always like when that team got blown out by Alabama in the BCS national championship game, it was like, oh, Eddie Lacy just juked Manti Te'o's girlfriend on that breakaway touchdown run.
But yeah, the PGA Tour champions, the PGA Tour, and the European Tour all featured 6-stroke wins on Sunday, which I thought was pretty interesting.
Interesting. Nothing. Yeah, I got no kernel of insight that I can take from that. And then everyone else just quit. It just happened to be a Sunday where if you weren't in the lead, you were like, let's par this out and get our
check. No, Doc Redman's trying to get into the Open, and the other Rory Sabatini's trying to get into the Open. So guys have stuff to play for. Do you want my stat of the day? We've already talked about both these guys. Do you want it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So Victor Hovland, my guy. Is Victor Hovland better than Matthew Wolff, by the way?
Yeah. Listen. I said that, and I told you that it was coming from a position where it was like, it was right before they both made their first start of the Travelers, and I just said, I understand the body of work that Matthew Wolff has put together as an amateur and as a elite collegiate golfer, but I can tell you that based on just seeing the way that Victor Hovland played against pros in 2 major championships, I'm Team Hovland.
So there's a scenario in which Wolf is the like fourth guy from last year's OSU title team to get his card. So Christopher Ventura won on the Korn Ferry Tour on Sunday. Hovland looks like he's trending toward a card for next year, depending on – there's multiple ways he could get there. And then you got Zach Boshu, who just played in the Rocket Mortgage Classic. Now, I think Wolf will – look, I think Wolf's going to be awesome. I think he's way better than Boshu. I think he's probably better – I think he probably has more talent than Hovland. I'm not going to, like, lose my mind over 2 events. But I'm going to start – I'm going to start the campaign of like, was Matthew Wolf the fourth best player on OSU's title team? Coming up after the break.
That's my
column.
That's the bold. So was Hovland over Wolf? Hovland over Wolf isn't like that's not something that is controversial. No,
that's not spicy, but I do think that like all along we were kind of like, wait, Wolf's ceiling is higher. He's the one that was getting all the buzz. But then you look back and you're like, well, was that because of his swing or was it because, you know, I don't know. I think it's less about Wolf being overrated and more about Hovland being underrated.
Got it. He is Kyle Porter. You can follow him on Twitter at Kyle Porter CBS, and you can see him on Tuesday and Wednesday on Golf Channel Morning Drive, 6 a.m. Eastern time to 10. Is that right?
7 to 9. And then replay from 9 to 11. I didn't do my stat of the day, though.
Oh, go ahead.
So Victor Hovland currently averaging more strokes gained off the tee per round than Rory McIlroy.
That seems unsustainable.
It seems highly unsustainable. He's averaging 1.3 strokes gained off the tee per round. Rory's at like 1.25. There's nobody else over 1. So... pretty impressive stuff so far. Anyway, that's how I got Chip.
You can follow me on Twitter at Chip_Patterson. Kyle, you need a nap.
I need to like go to sleep for tomorrow now.
Absolutely. Kyle, thank you very much.
Thanks, Chip.